Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Earlier this afternoon, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, or the OECD, presented its latest economic survey for Ireland. The survey looks at the country's recent performance and how it can maintain its strong growth and fiscal sustainability, while also taking an in-depth look at the big challenges of making housing more affordable and the green transition. Well, for more on their assessment of just how we're doing right now, we're joined by Chief Economist with the OECD, Alvaro Pereira. And you're very welcome, Mr. Pereira, to the programme, and thank you for taking the time for to speak with us. I might ask you firstly about Ireland's overall economic performance and how, what would be your assessment of how the Irish economy is faring right now?
Well, thanks very much for the invitation. First of all, it's quite important to say that Ireland, the Irish economy, continues to be fairly strong, very robust economic performance from a plethora of indicators. We have record low unemployment in Ireland, very high, the highest, in fact, employment rates that we had on record. On top of this, we're talking about modified domestic demand, or basically GNI star, growing close to 3% this year and 3.7, close to 2.7%, so close to 3% as well next year. I follow more than 60 countries around the world, from New Zealand to Latin America to Africa, and of course a lot of Europe as well, and I can honestly say that it's very difficult to see many countries doing as well as Ireland. I know there's a lot of challenges, but if you think about the transformation that Ireland has had in the past three or four decades, and the very solid performance recently as well, I think this bodes well for the Irish economy, and obviously for the Irish people, in spite of all the challenges, of course.
And indeed, one of those challenges, if we stick with the economy for the moment, is the high concentration of multinational dominated sectors and the risk that creates to Ireland's economy.
Well, a few years ago, we wrote a report that talks exactly about the difference between multinationals and SMEs. So we at the time, we look at productivity. There's a marked difference between productivity of multinationals and the SMEs. And so you do have something that you need to work on, which is basically try to bring more productivity and more competitiveness to most of your firms, the SMEs. And so going forward, of course, with an environment that is a bit more volatile, this brings more challenges for the Irish economy. And that's why it's so important to continue to have a very good business environment, so that you are able to continue to attract not only foreign but also Irish investment in many areas of the economy.
Of course, one of the biggest issues that we've been grappling with for really over a decade now is housing. And we've had some recent assessments here of the number of homes that need to be built to try and cope with our population in the years ahead. Some say 60,000, some say 70,000. Last week we had a figure of 90,000 a year that need to be built, all of which are much, much more than are being built at the moment. What, in your view, needs to be done to try and increase supply?
Well, it's absolutely true that since the financial crisis, population has grown a lot faster than the supply of housing in this country. And so this is creating significant bottlenecks, which has led to a big rise in property prices and house prices, at the same time bringing a lot of affordability issues for families in Ireland. And so that's the first thing that I would like to say. Second, housing affordability is something, and rising house prices is something that is happening in several parts of the world. If I look at Canada, Australia, Portugal, Spain, the UK, housing affordability is a huge issue. And so governments all around the world are really struggling with what can they do to improve housing affordability. In this country, I think the most important policy going forward should be supply, supply, supply. There's a marked difference between housing supply and demand. And that's why you're mentioning building so many houses. And even if you build the 50,000 houses that were planned, this will likely not be enough to catch up from the past needs that you existed. So that's why estimations of 70, 80, or 90,000 sometimes appear. So okay. We do think this is absolutely a priority, so that you are able to.
So the government has tried lots and lots of different things to try and increase supply, and they will argue that some of those things have worked. But one of the things that is currently under consideration, according to reports, is tax breaks for developers in an effort to try and unlock more private investment in housing. Now, I think your study is very negative on the idea of any introduction of tax incentives.
Well, we argued basically that tax incentives during the financial crisis didn't work very well at the time. So we basically argue that it is absolutely essential that, as I said, policies to increase supply should be prioritized. And it's important to avoid repeated large-scale changes to the fiscal and regulatory framework, which usually tend to lower investment certainty and long-term private investment in housing. In addition, we think that the rising number of schemes and fiscal costs increases the importance of basing house policies on sound economic data and cost-benefit analysis. We think this is quite important. So during the property boom that took place before the financial crisis, there were significant tax incentives, including tax deductions for mortgage interest payments, no taxes on property values, and others, that created long-term negative, what economists call externalities, or long-term negative impacts, including misallocation of housing, significant fiscal costs. And so that's why we've been more critical about this type of
mistakes
issues.
Mistakes of the past.
And we think that the impact of such tax incentives basically on supply and prices are likely to be fairly limited in the context of structural rigidities that exist in the housing market.
The report is also critical of two controversial, really, government schemes, the Help to Buy scheme and the First Home scheme, both of which fund first-time buyers. The report says that they can translate to higher house prices.
Well, what we argue is basically, remember, what we do in this type of reports, try to assess policy, but also try to see whether there's any alternative that could be done. In terms of, we think that most policies, this type of policy quite often, if they are universal, if they're not targeted to the lower income households or, you know, households that have bigger needs, very often they are very expensive, and usually they don't have the impact that is desired.
Okay. The rental market is something else that has been under a lot of discussion here, and you deal with that as well. You say that rents should be freely adjusted between tenancies. So at the moment, as most people will know, because of the rent pressure zones, if a tenant leaves a property, the rent charged in their property has to stay within the rules of the rent pressure zone, so it can't be increased freely for the next tenant. You're saying that should change. So if a tenant leaves the property, the landlord can increase the rent whatever they want.
Well, we don't say exactly that. We basically say that, first of all, that the complexity and frequency of changes to rent legislation should be lowered. Secondly, we think that the current rent controls might be adding to supply shortages. And so we present just options. And one of the options could be to provide existing tenants with reasonable security over tenure and rent levels that will bring some sort of rent stabilization, where what we call rent stabilization, which is basically where rent can adjust either freely or at least, you know, to adjust more for new contracts, so in between tenancies, but are regulated during the duration of the contract. And so what we are arguing basically is to have policies that will be able to stimulate more supply at the same time that you are able to protect the tenants.
Okay. I might ask you finally then about an area that you examine, our emissions targets. We know we're not on track, like very many other countries, I think, to meet our 2030 targets. What needs to be done as you would see it?
Well, first of all, Ireland has come a long way regarding renewables, but still the targets in terms of renewables investment, they're still and the shooting. There's still long to go. In terms of emissions, we think that it's important to continue to invest in renewables and to diversify the energy supply. This is also important for competitiveness. And on the other hand, we also think that the price scheme that exists right now is mostly for transportation, and most of the sectors are not subject to carbon pricing. And we argue that, you know, potentially other sectors should be considered so that you have more uniform carbon pricing around the economy.
Okay, very interesting to speak to you, and thank you for joining us. That is Chief Economist with the OECD, Alvaro Pereira. And thank you again, Alvaro, for joining us this afternoon. Just in some breaking news, the US President Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, have just got off the phone after a call lasting 1.5 hours. President Trump said afterwards, quote, "We agreed to work together very closely, including visiting each other's nations. The pair have agreed to have, quote, our respective teams start negotiations immediately on ending the war in Ukraine. We will begin by calling President Zelensky of Ukraine to inform him of the conversation, something which I will be doing right now," Trump said. Leading the negotiations will be Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Director of the CIA John Ratcliffe, National Security Advisor Michael Waltz, and Ambassador Steve Witkoff, he said. Donald Trump described the phone conversation as highly productive, and the leader agreed, "We want to stop the millions of deaths taking place in the war with Russia and Ukraine."